my mouth.
No, what am I saying?
What, this? It's nothing. Really, it's nothing. It's just, it's just Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
Have a good time. Make sure your seatbelts are fastened.
Okay, you little bastards. The time has come. The moment we've all been waiting for. It's the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Let's go.
Let's get this bad boy started. It is the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Number 438th podcast on Spotify right now.
Yeah, more or less.
We're climbing the ladder. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. You can find our website, thevocalminority.net. You can find our social medias, YouTube, TikTok. What's the other one?
Reddit.
Oh, Reddit. That's a big one, of course. Blue Sky, and then all the other ones, too.
Yes, indeed. And, yeah, we still have a comment line, 844-48-VOCAL. Use your telephone as a microphone and get vocal, for crying out loud.
Indeed. This is our second podcast of the week. The first one dropped on April Fool's Day. And I feel the need to purge my soul because I don't feel very good right now. And I assume this is what, like, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson feel like after every show. But, I don't feel good. Like, my soul kind of hurts right now.
Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast out of order, we had kind of a bizarre world going on our last podcast where Steve played the part of a conservative idiot.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I will tell you, it was April Fool's. Nick and I have been kicking this idea around for a while. Like, what if on April Fool's we just pretended that we were conservative and we both couldn't muster it up? But I took one for the team and was playing the part. And on one level, it was significantly easier than any other show we've ever done because I'm just making stuff up. I'm just, just winging it based on absolute no logic, sanity, or moral compass whatsoever. But yeah, now I feel dirty, not in a good dirty way.
I don't know if it just threw me off because we have a back and forth, you know, as people who agree, or if it just threw me off so bad because someone I love was talking like an idiot, you know? I don't know what, but it didn't settle with me very well.
Yeah, we covered more news stories than ever because what do you say when one of us is just saying dumb things?
That is funny, dude. We did. We went through them like crazy.
But like I said, happy post-April Fool's Day. And I hope that, I don't know, I'm sure there's some new listener that was the first show they checked out and probably the last.
I used to have a friend in high school. Every year on April Fool's Day, he would call people's parents, you know, that we went to school with, and they'd answer, and he'd be like, "Your son just died in a car accident."
Parents thought that was hilarious, right?
Yeah, they did. Oh, got him. Woohoo!
Like, I zinged them with their worst nightmare ever.
Right, yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, that's funny. You know, back in the Seattle radio days, Nick and I famously impersonated another talk show. We were all on the same station, and Nick and I were filling in for them one night. And so we decided to go on their show and just say that we were them. And we did these terrible impersonations of what the host sounded like. And as with all things radio, a certain percentage of the audience just believed it, even though we felt it was comically, stupidly over the top.
Yeah.
A certain amount of the audience just really accepted. I mean, one of us admitted we were gay. I think you admitted you murdered someone as the other host, and all these people were calling and totally fell for it. So
completely, dude. Yeah, I don't think people just put a lot of thought into stuff like that. Steve and I worked for Oldies radio station, and the afternoon guy was, this big. His name was Fastlane Phillips. Okay, do you remember when he was doing a remote? And a remote is like when they're out at a car dealership or whatever. We lost connection with him. And I finished the remote for him as him. Do you remember?
I don't know that I do remember that, no.
And no one knew. Hey, it's Fastlane Phillips, 935. You know, and nobody knew. And I was like, oh, man, did I pull off something so genius? Or are people just stupid? You know, they just tune in. It's supposed to be Fastlane. Oh, that's him.
little from column A, little from column B. It's Orson Welles' The War of the Worlds, you know, the old radio drama where they said that aliens were invading and people started freaking out. Because when the guy on the radio says something, X percentage of people will just believe it.
So. It's just the norms that we come to trust, right?
That's right. And after years of doing this, some people, for some reason, have come to trust us. So we have some things to discuss today, but I did get a request from a listener, Nick. They want to hear our input on a dating conundrum that they're in.
Interesting, dude. That's I don't know if I'm qualified. I'll do my best.
Well, a good chunk of our shows are about relationships, so whether we're qualified or not, we talk about it a lot. And we're both guys. I think maybe that's part of the perspective they're looking for, but
sure.
You know, maybe a little bit of my world of having too much dating experience in the last 5 years. So, this listener, we'll call her Sonia, and we'll say that she lives in Portland, Maine, East Coaster, thick accent, you know what I mean?
How come we can't use a real name?
I don't know, actually. I'm just going to protect the innocent.
Okay.
Here's the thing. So Sonia's in her early 50s, divorced a few years ago out there in the dating world. And she has a guy, probably give or take 20 years younger than her, who came up to her like in a Starbucks or whatever and started hitting on her. And they exchanged phone numbers. And they've been sending some texts back and forth.
Okay.
What's your generic stance on a guy early on in the dating phase sending unsolicited dick pics to a woman?
You'll get a decision real quick, right? Because either she's going to be completely into that and you found your person, or she's going to be like, what a creep, I'm out.
Right. I'm still waiting for the woman who, for some reason, gets just a straight-up dick pic. Not like the full naked guy or something, just a close-up of a dick who's like, oh, now I'm turned on. Now I'm into this guy.
Yeah, look at this wrinkly, veiny worm. Exactly. So beautiful.
So I think most normal people would agree that an unsolicited dick pic is probably, yeah, a red flag of sorts. But what if he's a gentleman and he asks, hey, can I send you a dick pic?
Hold on a second. I've never thought about this, dude. Have you ever sent a dick pic?
I believe we've discussed this. There was one occasion where I was in a committed relationship many months into it, and she had asked, like, you know,
okay.
I'm horny and low, like, here's a picture of me, send me a picture of you. So under that setting, in an established relationship, what it was asked for is the only time I have.
When you send a dick pic, do you send it hard or softiosis?
Oh, geez. I can't imagine sending a softioso one. I don't know if that's going to achieve on any level other than personal embarrassment.
Yeah, I guess I've never thought about it. I mean, I think that I have got some pictures that, you know, from a committed relationship. But I didn't put a lot of thought into, like, do you get the right angle? Do you get the right lighting? Like, in my case, it was just like, what's up? You know, it was just a selfie. I can't imagine just taking a picture of my peanut.
Yeah, like a selfie. You want to get a good up angle. Otherwise, it looks fat from down below. Although maybe you want it to look fat. Maybe that's the better angle for that. I don't know. But no, I mean, my general rule of thumb is you're a freaking creepy guy if you're sending dick pics, period. I don't know that asking permission really makes it that much better. This is what Louis C.K. kind of did when he was jerking off in front of women. But he was like, but I asked them first if it was okay. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, I think so. And so he did it. But yeah.
I don't want to be overly judgmental because everyone's got their kink. But I don't understand what the get off factor is on, like, do you mind if I send you a dick pic? Like, what does that do for you?
That's a great question. If it's getting you excited to send a dick pic, like, I don't know what that does say about you. Nothing good, I don't think.
Right,
I guess the goal or the hope is you'll get something hot back, but I don't know. What's more creepy? To say, well, can I send you a dick pic and hope you're going to get something in return? Or just say, hey, can you send me a naked picture of you? I'm going to leave my Johnson out of this for phase one here.
You know what? If I had to get this ball rolling, I think the way I would ask is like, hey, you want to exchange some pics? You know, maybe that's how I would ask. I don't think I would say like, I'll send you a picture of my dick if you send me a picture of your bone or your tits.
So wait, do you just leave it open ended? Did you want to exchange pics with that? The Ooh, implication,
inference, yeah, yeah. Like, hey,
see what she does.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Is this girl Sonia? Is she into this or creeped out?
Well, that's the big debate. She must have been into it to some extent because the pic was sent. And she acknowledged, like, yeah, it's a dick. Like, I'm not totally sure what to do with this. I don't know that she sent anything back. Okay. I do know that she's heavily on the fence of what to do with this younger guy.
Boy, there's so many factors here. I mean, if you're just looking to have fun, like, I don't know, go have fun. I mean, but if you're looking to be back into a relationship or whatever, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to work out, you know? So I don't know.
I would say 11 times out of 10, it's not going to work out if you're looking for a relationship and there's any solicited or unsolicited dick pic thing going on here.
Yeah. Listen,
I would say it's a pretty safe bet. It's a gigantic freaking red flag. That unsolicited or solicited, okay? Now, like you'd have said, though, I think you did nail it on the head, that, listen, if you're in a woman in your early 50s and you got some MILF hunter in his 30s looking to just ravage you, like, if you just want to have some crazy sex or whatever, then hell, go for it. Like, no one's judging you. Like, you know what you're getting into, and then that's fair and fine. But if you're looking for a relationship, gigantic freaking red flag.
Yeah. And don't get it twisted. I mean, if you walk into this, you have to walk in just for, I want to go have fun and screw, you know, but don't get attached after you screw and think, well, maybe, like, no, this will not turn into anything good.
Right. Can you ever envision telling your children, how'd you meet mom and dad? Well, he sent me a dick pic, and that was just love at first sight. So.
Yeah, love at first bite, dude. Get a little. I just don't understand sending the peanut, dude. I mean, well, like we've talked about on this program so many times, like, I'm obviously heterosexual. Women, you have beautiful bodies.
Right.
And I don't. I mean, you know, at my peak physical good condition, I think it was fine to look at, but there was nothing like, wow, look at the curve, look at the way, you know, like, it's just different.
Listen, if you appreciate a nice male body and you want to take some sort of full body, like naked, like here's me entirely naked, I can see maybe there's some logic to that.
Sure.
But just a close up on, yes, that wrinkly little cucumber there. Like, I don't get it. And Kennedy and I were discussing this and I made that point. That, for better or for worse, a woman's body is a work of art, and men's body are not. It's very utilitarian, and unless you are Fabio, you're some sculpted, you know, Adonis, then no. Like, even if we know how to use our bodies correctly, I don't know if they're just objects of beauty.
No. I mean, I'm almost 50 years old. I'm surprised every day that women let us climb on top of them, you know, like, you know.
It's a fair point. So, yeah, I would say a gigantic red flag there. And I will also say, Kennedy asked me, like, how come you never asked me to, you know, how come you never sent me one? She was apparently expecting it early in our relationship. I think just because it's become so normal to exchange pics nowadays that she was expecting me to. And she was apparently putting some level of thought into, well, how would I reply? What would be a good angle or lighting for me or whatever? Like, she was actually preparing for the unsolicited or solicited and what she would respond with.
It's interesting, dude. I mean, like I said, when we started this conversation off, I don't know if I'm qualified because I haven't dated in so long, you know, but you're right. I mean, that's what people are doing these days, it seems. I mean, you hear about it all the time. People are doing, but I've never been part of that dating generation. Dick pics weren't a thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's been a new phenomenon. And I've said this before, and I'll just reiterate it again on this topic, that revenge porn guys generally that keep naked pictures of women, and then when they break up, they post them or use it to shame them or whatever. Like, society needs to stop allowing the slut shaming, quote unquote. the guy is the scumbag in that scenario, that you not only have kept the pictures, which is debatable, but to then use them publicly. That is not on the woman that she ever trusted this guy enough to take a naked picture and send it to him. It's on right. the guy for being a total freaking douchebag and keeping it and reposting it out there.
Yeah, it's so interesting, man, because, you know, like, I don't know, do people still Snapchat? You know, I know people were snapping for a while, and that was an app that you took a picture and you could send it to somebody and it disappeared. So technically they couldn't keep it, you know. Oh. I mean, you could always take a picture of it or what, but it was meant to fade away and go away. Yeah. It is dangerous, dude. I mean, I think it's really dangerous, especially for these younger girls that are in high school that are doing this. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about, oh, that's child porn. You can be busted for child porn. So it's dangerous all the way around. Like, let's just wait and we'll watch a video camera together. Let's right. do it old school, dude.
Right. Oh, for sure. So, all right. So, Sonia, you wanted the input of two exemplary men here. If you're looking for a good time, this might be a perfect guy for you. If you're looking for a relationship, keep on looking because it ain't going to be with him.
Yes, I think we got it just right.
That's a fact.
So there you go. All right. So speaking of things that are the signs of the times and that have become normal, on a mildly related topic, I found an article about everyday American habits that baffle the rest of the world. And I don't know if dick pics are an international phenomenon or not. I would assume they are, but maybe not.
Interesting.
It's a phenomenon.
Oh, it is a phenomenon, apparently.
At least around here it is. So yeah, I thought we'd run through some of these things. Do we agree that they're American habits?
And, sure.
And yeah, they baffle the rest of the world. So the first one on the list I find odd, tipping generously. That's a uniquely American thing.
For
You've
sure.
traveled abroad more than I have.
Yeah.
Does that seem like an American thing?
Yeah, we'll see when we're in 2 months, when we're in Greece. When yeah. I went to Greece, dude, for my first time, I tipped like I would tip here. And I had people tell me like, no, cross that out. They make a living wage and well, I'm not expected to pay. And they almost feel weird about it. Like you could still tip, but like a 5% tip in a lot of countries would be very generous to leave anything. A lot of the time they don't expect you to leave anything at all.
Wow. That is a crazy phenomenon.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I'm going to dispel this myth while we're in Greece because if it's expensive enough already. This article says, while tipping doesn't exist in most parts of the world, the practice is alive and well in America. Many international visitors are confused about why tipping is necessary. They assume that restaurants and bars pay their people a living wage.
Isn't that something? I never thought about it from the other side of people coming here yeah. and being like, 20%? What?
Yeah. Listen, I brought this up before that I sort of wonder where this tipping, you know, society and culture came from, but it's become so normal in America, at least apparently, that we all have just accepted it and we feel bad when we don't tip and we often will guilt someone if they only tip 15% instead of 20 or 25. But it really is weird that we make some people's living based on the whim of the customer. You would never go into a hardware store and, you know, tip on the purchase of a hammer. Or assume that the person at the hardware store, if they're not nice to me, then they don't deserve to make a living wage today. If they don't kiss my ass, they're not going to make as much money today.
Completely, dude. I mean, that's a great point. But it also does encourage serving staff to do a good job, you know, to know that, oh, my money's on the line here. So, like, if I take really good care of these folks, you know, I'm going to make more money.
Yeah, that's harsh. I mean, there's many jobs where the way I treat you should have nothing to do with what I'm actually paying. Like, obviously, if I'm overtly a jerk, I should be losing my job. But I just didn't kiss up enough, so I'm not going to make much money today. I mean, it really is a weird sort of precedent that we've set up.
Tipping culture in America has become, we've talked about it before, out of control. When we went to Daniel's, which is a nice steakhouse here locally, when we went to Hamilton, we went and ate. Our service was awful. I mean, it was terrible. We sat for 20 minutes before we even had a drink in our table, and they were not busy. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to tip like 12-13% at best. It was terrible. She brought the bill to me. I was already charged 22% without even, and you know, sometimes they'll do that for like a large group, but not for two people. I was like, that's bullshit.
That is bullshit, quite frankly. The automatic tipping on there, that's weird. Here's the thing that I sometimes feel bad about, that I've had experiences like that where the food takes forever, they get it wrong. But is it actually the waiter or waitress's fault? Like, what if the kitchen's the reason it's slow? Or what if the chef's the one that screwed it up? Like, should I actually be taking it out on the waitress?
There's a couple things I'll say about that. Is usually you can tell, because your waiter or waitress, if you see them standing around having conversation, your food sitting in the window, you know. Yeah. But on top of that, most restaurants, the waiter or waitress tips the kitchen out. So if I tip less, that would be their time to be like, you know what, that was a kitchen's mistake. Like, I'm not going to tip the kitchen out. Then it's in the hands of the wait staff, you know. Yeah.
Boy, I don't know. It would be nice if we would just probably do this European thing, apparently. Just pay everyone a livable wage and don't put the guilt on the customer to decide what they're going to make that day. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is nice when you go somewhere. You don't have to add it into your total. Am I spending too much? Like, what's this going to be? You know, you buy a couple $100 dinner and all of a sudden you got to tip $40 or more. Like, it adds up.
Yeah, definitely does. So, all right. The next thing that's apparently uniquely American that baffles the rest of the world. I guess I've heard of this, but I'm also surprised it's not common in some other countries, at least, eating large portions of food. If you're wondering why nearly 40% Americans are classified as obese, look no further than the comically large portion size at most American restaurants.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I won't say that there aren't places I've gone in other countries where I still get a big portion, but I have been to a lot of places, like in Spain. They do a lot of tapas, and it's smaller plates, and it's kind of shared around the table, and portions aren't nearly as big, and they're usually a lot healthier. I mean, come on, dude. Have you ever been to Claim Jumper?
Yeah.
What the fuck are we doing here? Like, my plate weighs 30 pounds and you don't think you're going to gain weight from that?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, there are some restaurants that certainly go comically large with it. I mean, the tapas, I almost thought that was designed to be like appetizer size. Like, it's supposed to be the warm up to the meal and not the actual meal.
It is in America, but and I suppose it is in Spain, too. I mean, we still ate a meal, but a lot of the time people will just sit around and have tapas and share them with each other. And they're just smaller plates, because eating in other countries is much more social than it is here in America. And I'm not saying we don't socially eat, but it's much more, you know, in Spain, 10 o'clock, we go to dinner at 10. And a lot of the time people will sit there and talk and have wine until 2 or 3 in the morning. Kids are running around.
Right. You were in Germany. I imagine Germans just serving up a big plate of Wiener Schnitzel and sausage or whatever. What were the portions like in Germany?
They were good. They weren't overly large, though.
Okay. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, did Americans start demanding bigger portions and that's why the restaurants did it? Or the restaurants do it and now we're all eating them and now it's a big catch-22? Like, I don't know where that started.
Fast food started this all off with, you know, now it's got 3 patties. It's the Baconator, 4 patties, the Whopper, you know, all that shit. I think we've been tricked into eating this way.
I blame the kids in Africa.
You do, because we were told to eat our food because exactly. They're starving?
Yes. Okay. How many times were we told that growing up? Like, you understand there's a starving kid in China right now, a starving kid in Africa right now. Finish what's on your plate.
Completely. Yeah, no. It's funny, because in Japan, did you know at schools in Japan, you know, they eat well in Japan. There aren't obese people in Japan. There's just not. And in schools, every school is required to hire a nutritionalist. Not only do they design the school menu based off standards that are created by the government, but they teach kids how to eat appropriately and how to remain healthy. We don't have anything like that here. I mean, I just picture the lunch lady slopping it on the tray, you know, Pizza Tuesday.
Yeah. Are all-you-can-eat buffets a thing in other countries? Because There's a new restaurant here in my town that I've been going to. Well, it's new to me, but it's a Chinese buffet. And I find I eat significantly more when it's a buffet because I feel like I got to get my money's worth and all this stuff, like as opposed to just ordering one thing and eating, and I eat to excess.
Completely. And I don't think they have I've never seen buffets like that in other countries. But do you also notice that you waste a shit ton of food because I'll try some of this, I'll try some of this, you know, and throw so much of it away?
No, I clean my plate because I only take stuff I want. So I eat it all.
When Rachel and I go to the buffet at the casino, you don't know how much food I throw away because I just want to try. I want a bite of that. I'll take a bite of that. You know, right.
That's funny. Yeah, my grandma used to tell me that whole, you know, there's starving kids in Africa. And I would always look at her and say, yeah, name one.
You really put it to the test.
That's right. All right. Uniquely American things to baffle the rest of the world. Not socializing with your neighbors. Hallelujah. God bless America. I don't want to socialize with my neighbors.
What do you mean? That's an American thing that we don't?
Yeah. They're saying everywhere else they socialize with their neighbors, but Americans do not.
We used to. What does this country come to, dude, that we don't do that anymore? Listen, I've joined in. I don't really socialize with my neighbors. I mean, just like you, I will if they're outside. I'll say hello or whatever. But we used to count on our neighbors for things. You know, a cup of sugar, help me, a tree fell on my house, my car won't start, will you jump my car? Like, you used to, a neighbor was a friend.
Yeah. And I think some minimal level of knowing your neighbor's good, so that if there is the emergency thing, or you can help each other out here and there. But I find the problem when you really start to get to know your neighbors is now I feel like every time I'm walking in with groceries, I got to stop and say hi to Larry because he's out front and got to send him a Christmas card too. Or like, I just, it's such a hassle. I'd rather just everyone mind their own business around here. And then God forbid you have some annoying neighbor you've somewhat befriended. And God, I mean, if someone comes knocking on my door that's a neighbor, shoot me in the face. I have a hard enough time shunning actual people I know. People who live next door know that I'm home. Well, it's miserable.
My neighbor, when they first moved in, for about 3 weeks in a row, came and knocked on our door and asked us to come over and watch a movie.
Yeah.
So the first two times I was like, oh, we can't do it. And finally I was like, they're not going to stop asking. We went over and watched a movie with them. It was the most we didn't know each other. It was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. No, that's weird. I will say, you know, my neighbor next door here, he has a dirt bike and we had, I don't know if it was serious or not, but hey, we should go ride someday. But now I feel this constant pressure of, am I supposed to reach out to him? Do I go knock on the door? Do we go ride? Am I a jerk because I haven't done it? Does he not like me because he hasn't asked me to ride either? Like, it's too much social pressure all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not, I could see you being no good with neighbors, dude.
Yeah. So I'm okay with this uniquely American aspect.
Okay.
You know, I saw some comedian recently talking about the fact that, you know, when you were a kid, the neighbors would come over, friends would stop by. Come on in, let's have a coffee cake. Friends are stopping by, everyone. And nowadays, if someone knocks on your front door, you're like, who the hell is that? What crazy person has stopped by my front door? Is this knocking at the door? Psycho. Totally.
Yeah. No, that is, and that is so true. Anytime someone knocks on my door, I'm just like, who is that? And why are you here?
Or what about this? Are you supposed to get out and ring the doorbell if you're picking someone up or you're dropping off, you know, your wife or your kid? Like, or do you just text them? I'm here, you know, knock, knock. It's
I think it's a text now.
I think so, too. People are crazy. Here's a uniquely American thing that, yeah, we are friggin' wrong. Tying healthcare to employment. Oy. Oh, not cool for the employer, I can tell you, having been on that side of the fence, and miserable for the entire freaking country, having been on the sick person or having a sick kid part of it all.
Yeah, and let's not pretend like all companies and corporations are great. You know, like my wife's father was a great example of this. He worked for Boeing for years, and he got sick. He was close to dying. You know, he needed medical help. His company switched him to overnights after he had been there for like 30 years to try and get him to quit because he was too sick to keep coming to work, just so they could get him out of the healthcare. It's just dangerous to have, it's a conflict of interest, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm listening to Rachel Maddow's new book. It's called Drift, something like the unmooring of the industrial, military-industrial complex from the government structure. It's talking about how presidents since the 70s have slowly started to basically declare war without Congress actually signing off on it. Hmm. And one of the chapters is talking about how in the 90s, we started to realize how expensive it is to care for our troops with health care, with child care. So we started farming out a lot of benign, quote unquote, military jobs, people that, you know, fix the helicopters or people that wash the laundry. Like, do they have to be enlisted military? Why can't we just hire people for that? And on one level, they're saving money because they're not paying benefits to these people. But we also got in this weird catch-22 of some of these private companies started to declare that, well, our troops are not subject to American law when they're over there because they're not in America. And they're also not subject to the law of the country that they're in because they're on an American military base.
Unbelievable, dude.
And there's all sorts of documented incidents of child sex trafficking and drug use and sleeping all day on the job and billing for 12 hours. And like, you know, you separate some of these things and
yeah. You
save a few bucks on one level, but you're causing epic problems on others.
Yeah. No, that is crazy. And that is definitely an American thing, dude.
Yeah. So fun stuff there. Next one. These are uniquely American things that baffle other countries. Not aware of this. You tell me if you've seen this elsewhere. What's with Americans' bathroom stall doors anyways? Yeah. Europeans are intrigued at best and mortified at worst when they visit and use American public restrooms, that there are the gaps between the stall doors and the opposite of private, especially compared to European stalls, offering complete privacy when doing your business. So they're talking about like the gap where you can like see people's feet or something under the stalls. Like, what are European public bathrooms like? You're completely enclosed?
Beautiful, dude. It's a freaking suite. I mean, you have full privacy. No one can see you. They can't see you through the little crack. They can't see your feet. They can't hand you anything. Like, you're in a nice little... It's still about the same size of our stalls, but they're just floor to ceiling, nice door that locks, not latches. And right. Yeah. I mean, I know we could only speak for Europe because I've seen them in Europe, but I know that like in some other countries that they're even worse. Like there's no doors at all or, you know, even half walls. It's just holes in the ground that you try and balance over, you know. But yeah, Europe has nice, great toilets, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I've always found it to be somewhat of a mortifying experience, whether I'm the one taking a dump in one of those stalls or, God forbid, I'm in there having to listen to somebody else. Like, it's a great question. Why the hell do we design our bathrooms with this open air policy? You know?
I don't know if it was a cost-saving measure, like, you know, if we only build 3/4 of the wall. But yeah, it is weird. Yeah. How vulnerable do you feel? First of all, I don't like to poop unless I'm at my house or your house. You know, I don't want to poop in public, you know. So those doors are always, you know, the crack. I don't want people looking at me, and I just feel vulnerable in there. I don't know why they make bathrooms the way they do in America.
So does that mean in Europe, when you have a secret discussion in the bathroom, you don't have to look under the stall door for feet? They're locked away, so who cares?
I mean, you could kind of go check the doors, I suppose. And I also even think that, you know, like, I think in, I don't remember where, somewhere in Europe, they have little light bulbs at the top. If it's green, the door is, no one's in there. If it's red, someone's in there and it's locked, so don't even bother trying.
It's like the on-air lights we have at radio stations. If the lights are on, don't come in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Well, that apparently is uniquely American, and I will agree that that makes no sense. Let's see. Uniquely American thing, taxes not being included. Is that how other countries work? I envy people who live overseas because they never suffer from tax-induced sticker shock when they're paying for anything. Taxes being added to all purchases is bizarrely an American thing. So when you're shopping abroad, the price on the sticker, that's the price?
That's the price you pay, yeah. And the employer then takes it out. They know what they're charging, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being a kid and having that realization, and I thought it was so adorable to watch each of my kids go through that. I've saved up the $9.99. I'm going to buy this thing. And it's like, it's actually $11.68. Sorry, kid. Like,
right.
What do you mean? It says it's $9.99. Like,
and you wonder why do we do that?
That's a great question. It's got to be some level of psychology maybe that just helps us accept that taxes are a reality. Like, tell it, reality is it's $9.99. But really, really, it's going to be $11.68 or whatever.
By the point you get to the register, you've already decided to buy it. So you're not going to back out when they give you the real price.
Yeah, apparently. Well, that's interesting.
Interesting.
I always do like working in there's some environments I've been in where you do out-the-door pricing.
Yeah.
You know, or it's $200, and that means we're going to pay the taxes on it.
Right.
They're still paying the taxes. You're just making them feel better that we're going to pay the taxes, and you just deduct it off of it. So every other country is just out-the-door pricing. It's already there.
Yeah. I don't know if it's every country, but I do know that many places I've traveled to,
America. How about this? I did not realize this was a uniquely American thing. Eating in our cars. Other countries don't eat in their cars, huh? Fast food or drive up or go take your lunch break in your car or something.
That's interesting. You know what? I'm a foodie. I think the only fast food restaurant I ate at was in London, and it was out of necessity. It was late at night, and I went to McDonald's, and there were people. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. There were people all stacked inside eating at the tables. So I didn't really think about it, but I think they had a drive through.
It's interesting. Speaking of that, apparently Americans eat their meals very quickly compared to other countries.
That's 100% true. Yeah. I mean, like I said before, food is a socializing. You look forward to going and sitting and tasting and actually eating your food, not just shoveling it down your throat.
Yeah. I wonder where that comes from. Our work culture or lack of socializing at the dinner table?
Yeah, I think probably a little bit of both. I mean, it all checks out. It all makes sense why we're doing that. But it is not like that in other countries. They really take their time. And again, I think it's why we're more obese, you know, because they say the slower you eat, it takes some time for your body to catch up and tell you you're full. And if you eat too fast, you know, the signal doesn't get there in time. So you always overeat.
It's interesting. I'm always the last to leave the dinner table. I eat slowly. And it's not because I'm European at heart or something and I want to socialize. Like, I have a bad habit of choking and I don't want to die. So I tend to just chew thoroughly and try to make sure I swallow correctly so that I don't die.
Interesting. I didn't know that about you. I eat slow too. I'm always the last. In fact, a lot of the time I'll get left at the table. People will just be off doing shit and I'm just there like, thanks guys, appreciate
it. It's a common occurrence in my life. I've gotten to the point where I'll tell Kennedy or my kids or whatever, like, you don't have to wait for me. Like, I eat slowly. And if I'm ever talking, that slows me down even further. But the other day we were out when I was visiting my dad, like there was four of us at the table and I'm halfway through my meal and everyone else is done. Then I feel the pressure of like, well, crap, I got to catch up now. That's where I am. So.
Why do you choke? You ever almost died?
Yes. I have something, I think it's called aphasia. I'd have to look it up to make sure that's right. But I have like a narrow gap there or something at the top of my throat. So if I don't chew thoroughly, and anything that's like string cheese, like mozzarella on a pizza or something, in a restaurant in Seattle, I choked on mozzarella cheese off a pizza and had to like bend over the top. Like, I've learned how to essentially do the Heimlich on myself.
You have?
Yes. Because there was once or twice where I truly stopped breathing and I essentially, you know, bend over and just kind of start like, you know, shoving on my chest and like, you know, trying to force it out. But my kids have seen this happen. Kennedy's seen it happen once already where I will just do this weird motion where I feel something getting stuck and I just bend forward and I start like jerking my head and I can like a bird trying to regurgitate to the baby. Like I just physically get it out there. So
that's terrifying.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And I've told the story before. I don't know if on the show or not, but you know, in Neo, when they were a baby, 1 year old, like they started choking. I was feeding them ravioli, and I mean, one of them just got stuck. She flat out stopped breathing, talking, making noise, and I could see their face getting pale.
Ooh.
And I just went into the zone for like 30 seconds where I did the first version of the Heimlich, didn't work. And I remember this doctor telling me, like, because you're supposed to lay a baby over your arm and pat its back. Like, the doctor told me, worst case scenario, you literally will hold that baby upside down and start shaking it and patting it, you know, and that's where the ravioli came out. And I freaked out. I mean, once she had spit that thing out, I just started bawling. Like, oh, my kid almost died in my arms. Like, we were 30 seconds away from death. And now I'm just paranoid as fuck when anyone I'm with starts, like, you know, at any level of, you know, hesitation eating. I'm going to be like, are you okay? Are you okay? Like, I go PTSD mode.
You know, I've told the story before where I saved that lady choking on steak with the Heimlich maneuver, and I started crying after she spit that steak up. Yeah. So I can't imagine my own child, let alone a baby doing, you know, like that's terrifying. But you know what? Everyone should know how to do the Heimlich maneuver and the Heimlich maneuver, if you ask me. But, you know, they say that people die from choking because they're too embarrassed to acknowledge they're choking to other people and too embarrassed to ask for help, which is crazy, dude. Most people, that's how they die.
Yeah. It's interesting, the Heimlich and the Heimlich, because I have told Kennedy, do you know how to do the Heimlich? Because one of these days you're going to have to save my life. No pressure, right. But make sure you figure that out.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I am most likely to die during sex. And I know that's going to be disturbing to you, but just know that that's how I want to die. So when you roll my stiff body off of you, just know that I'm happy about that, okay?
You're stiff already? You think she's laid and cuddled you for a while? You've already entered in
to some level, but yeah.
Wow. So do you want her to lick your hind though? Where does the hind lick come in?
Just sex and eating is my point. Like, okay. Those are the scenarios where I'm going to die. If all I right. die while I'm eating, that's your fault. If I die while we're having sex, then just know that I died happy. And
it's all good.
Rolling. Yeah, it's fine. One should make you feel guilty. One should not.
Right. That's okay. Well, good.
So, yeah. And that will wrap up my list of uniquely American things that baffle everyone else.
All right. I am going to expand to the world and beyond and just talk to you about people, Stephen. I come across a bizarre list that I thought, oh, this would be interesting to look over. These are people who thought the unusual things their bodies did were totally normal until someone told them, like, that's not normal. Your body can do that.
Interesting.
Do you have anything?
That's a good question. I don't know that I personally have experienced anything like that. I will say, again, visiting with my dad this weekend, you know, I mean, he's a retired surgeon, and he has just this terrible habit of at the dinner table while everyone's eating, talking about obstructions and surgeries and removing masses from people. And he started in on these stories about how that he is a doctor, that doctors either overdiagnose themselves, everything is a tumor and a brain cancer, or they think they're invincible and they wait till they're about to die. And he gave a few examples of nurses that came in for his breast cancer, you know, medical practice, and
yeah,
that they had like giant pustule oozing cancer lumps on their breasts.
Nurses?
Yes. Wow. Where, you know, they derobed and he was like, I don't need a test. Like, what were you thinking? Why did you not come here a year ago? Like, the cancer is oozing out of your body. And the one was just like, really? I thought maybe it was acne or something. Like, yeah, I think it's getting better. Is there a cream I can put on it? Like,
you know, I mean, I'm sure you know this. And maybe you don't because you're a doctor's son. But sometimes with health scares, many people will make excuses for why something is happening because the reality is too much to handle and process. You would think that nurses in the someone working in the medical field would be a bit different, but I saw it with my dad. I was, you know, when he had cancer the first time, he was like, you know, oh, I've been peeing nothing but blood, and I was like, oh, how long has that been going on for? He was like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, 9 months or what? 9 months? Like, if I pee blood more than once, I'm going right in, you know?
Yeah.
As we go over this list, I'm going to tell you about this first person. I didn't know that I had aphantasia until I read a BuzzFeed article a few years ago. I can't visualize anything. It's pitch black when I close my eyes every time. I never knew that when someone said, picture this, other people actually saw something. I thought it was just describing a situation. I was blown away when I learned people can actually watch their memories in their head.
First of all, I thought Aphantasia was a Disney movie. So that's some sort of disorder where you cannot visualize things?
Apparently so. Everything is just when you close your eyes and focus on something, a memory or whatever, it's just pitch black. I mean, when you close your eyes and I ask you, like, hey, think about the first time we went on the air with the Vocal Minority. Yes. It plays in your head, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We've had the chat before about the fact that some people apparently do not have an internal monologue.
Right.
And I cannot accept that. Like, you're telling me when you think hungry food, like just hamburger, no, like there's no thinking of the options. There's no, what am I, just thought, result, do it. Like, I don't accept that someone's brain can work that way. But according to some papers I have read, like 10% of the population has no internal monologue. So I guess if you are that person, I guess I could see why you would think like this has to be the same for everyone, right?
I guess. I don't know. It's so hard for me to even think about that, just like it is for you. I mean, when we talk about something like this, this is what I would think of when we're talking about someone who's mentally slow, right?
Or ill or something.
Yeah.
You can't picture something. If I tell you to picture your mother's face, it's just, don't know. Every time I see it, it's a new experience.
It's just a black screen in their head. That's,
I don't think that's real. How could that be? Literally, how do you recognize anyone then? Like, oh, there's Nick. How would you know that that's Nick? You couldn't. That makes no sense.
I think it's like I think you're kind of just like a robot, dude, where you know, when you're hungry, you just walk over and start eating something. You know, I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, they say that's how some animals' brain works, just very, you know, hungry food, you know, hunt kid.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no, it's just one thought to the next immediately. Like, I understand if you have some very simple brain that maybe that makes sense, but yeah, you can't picture anything. So, and I don't know how you would even start to figure that out. It's like describing a color to a blind person. Like, how do you know you don't see anything? How do you know that what I'm saying I envision is not what you just picture black. I don't. That's
weird. Yeah, it's strange concept. These are all people that have things going on with their bodies they thought were normal until someone was like, that's not normal. Sometimes when I look at an object, I see it completely out of proportion, like a gigantic spoon, for instance. It used to cause me terrible anxiety when I was a kid, and no one would understand. Flash forward to a couple of years ago, I found out that what I have is known as Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Basically, there's a miscommunication between my cornea and my brain that causes this. As an adult, it's easy to just breathe through it until it goes back to normal, as it only lasts a few seconds. But as a kid, it was a complete nightmare.
I will tell you, Kennedy has brought something up. It sounds either exactly what that is or very close to it. She had told me that she does not have the ability to gauge the size of something. Like, will this chunk of cheese fit into that piece of Tupperware? Like, her brain, she says, really can't gauge the size of something relative to another object. Which one's bigger or smaller? Which one would fit into the other?
That is so interesting to me. And you wonder, is it something like this where it's actually a syndrome, or is it that she didn't do that when she was a baby, where, you know, like put the star in the hole, you know, why? That's interesting.
Again, like, I just have a hard time engaging that. Like, I don't know, like, what's a yard and what's 2 feet? Like, I can see there's some level of, like, I was off on my guesstimation, but
sure.
She claims that she really has, like, this straight-up block. I just cannot gauge that. So she does trial and error, and obviously I don't think she's insane or anything, although she has been with me for over a year now, so maybe she...
something going on, dude, yeah. Right. I mean, this is... she would be a terrible mover, you know, like, right. She's... That's interesting. These are all people that thought these strange things about their bodies were normal until someone said, that's not normal. When I was in third grade, there was a lump behind my front upper tooth. They assured me it was an abscess. They put me on antibiotics, waited a week, and then lanced it. It turned out to be full of tiny teeth. They look like squirrel teeth to me. They saved a bunch of them and then put 3 stitches in my gum. Because of the tiny teeth and stitches, I got a whole $5 from the tooth fairy. They show an x-ray of this, and yeah, I mean, there's her teeth, and then she's got a pocket of just like all these tiny little teeth.
What in the holy hell are you talking about? That sounds like a freaking nightmare horror movie. Of course you didn't think that was a thing, because it's not a thing. Or it shouldn't be. That's horrifying.
Thought everyone had tiny little teeth.
Little teeth embedded in your gums?
Yes.
What is the science behind that atrocity?
Ugh. I don't know. See if you think this is normal. This person did, and someone said, no, it's not. I couldn't breathe through my nose for most of my life. I always assumed that this was normal and that everyone who talked about breathing through their nose was lying or exaggerating. I got a CPAP in my late 20s, and as a side effect, my nasal passages finally opened up. My ENT said, that's weird, but not unprecedented.
What, he had a crayon shoved up there his whole life or something? Or just naturally his nasal cavity was not open?
Just the way God made him, apparently, yeah. And he thought it was normal. Like, people were lying when they were like, breathe in through your nose.
Oh, now, interesting. There's a classic Simpsons where Homer gets his head x-rayed and he's got a crayon shoved in his brain. Because when he was a little kid, he tried to see how many crayons he could put up his nose. And he sneezed. And he was like, I think they all came out, but one of them was stuck in his brain his whole life. And they took the crayon out. It turns out he was a genius. So, but boy, I mean, I guess that's all things relative. If your nose never worked, then I guess I could see why you would just think that that's some expression, you know, breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth.
But if you can't breathe through your nose, does that mean you can't smell?
That's a great question. Maybe the first time you went to some 80s cocaine party and realized it all just falls back out. Like, this doesn't work. This has to be wrong. But yeah, I don't know what kind of an abnormality that is. But
yeah.
I mean, I don't breathe through my nose well, and I can tell you it sucks. So.
I never used to, and it's funny that they mention a CPAP machine, because now when I sleep, I can only breathe through my nose, and it has opened up a whole new way of breathing for me.
Mm.
This person says, when I'm exhausted and need to sleep, I hear a loud knocking sound like someone's at the door. No one else ever hears it, and now I just associate it with needing rest. It only happens when I'm overly tired and need to sleep.
Wow. Or when the voices tell me to murder someone, I hear the knocking, knocking.
That's freaky. You know, like, oh gosh, I guess it's time for bed. You know, I hear the knock.
Right. Isn't that the telltale heart or whatever, the Edgar Allan Poe thing where I hear the crow, the thump, thump, thumping, and
yeah,
thinks he's going insane. And yeah, so what is there a medical disorder that causes your brain to knock when you're tired? Is that the point of this?
I mean, if not, if there is, it doesn't say it in this article, but it was just something that he thought that's how everybody knew they were tired. You know, when you hear knocking, and then it took somebody saying like, nah, I don't hear that. Like, normal people don't hear that.
It's the Sandman at the door. It's time for sleepy. I would love to know what the hell that actually was. But if this is how you were born and grew up, then of course you think it's normal. But He never mentioned that to anyone, huh? Like, hey, are you getting tired? Do you hear the knocking? They'll never mention that that was weird.
I mean, he finally did. That's what this, that's this whole article is about. Like, he finally said it to someone and they were like, that's not normal.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
These are all things people thought were normal about their bodies until they found out they weren't. It was years and years before I found out the reason other people can gulp soda is because most don't experience a serious burning sensation when they drink it. I can only sip carbonated drinks very slowly because they burn all the way down into my stomach. Obviously, I don't drink a lot of soda. I thought that people in ads where they chug Coke were drinking colored water because no one can actually chug soda.
Interesting. I mean, I know that sensation, and I think it feels kind of good, actually. I always remember chugging a cold Mountain Dew and thought that was, you know, phenomenal, but it actually burns. That's odd.
And doesn't sound nice, right?
You may have gonorrhea of the mouth and throat and everything if it's burning when you drink.
Yes. How about this one, dude? When I close my eyes, I see pictures, not an outline of what I was just looking at or not a picture of something I'm thinking about, just random ass pictures. They're all over the place. I thought this was normal until I asked my boyfriend, you know, those pictures you see when you close your eyes? And he had no idea what I was talking about. Turns out most people see black. I was 37 when I learned this.
Well, that sounds like a handy function, you know? I mean, a little kaleidoscope slideshow thing going on. What were those things, the vision clicker things or whatever when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. But this gives a whole new meaning to a spank bank. I mean, it's really in HD, right?
Yeah. Boy, do they have any control over what the images are? Because honestly, if you're seeing random images, that's some level of psychosis. It would have to be.
She only sees random. She says they're all over the place.
Wow.
It's almost like, what's that movie with Stanley Kubrick?
Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange, where it's just weird images everywhere. I mean, some of this shit is freaky.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that has some sort of mental disorder. Like hearing voices, if you're seeing images that A, you're not controlling, and B, you've never even seen them before,
you're
probed by an alien, or yes, you have some mental thing going on. That's crazy.
It always comes back to aliens. There's a lot of things with sight in this. This person said, I thought everyone saw static 24/7. When I was told that wasn't normal, I assumed that everyone still saw static in the dark because it's a known phenomenon of human brains making things up in the darkness. All my eye appointments were normal. There was nothing wrong on the visual end. I tried doing research, but nothing came up. About 6 years ago, I decided to try Googling my symptoms, and again, nothing. It's a visual syndrome. I finally found out. It explains all of my symptoms. I see static 24/7 when I close my eyes.
Wow. Interesting. You just got to tune your antenna in better.
Yeah, you should get some rabbit ears, dude.
Here's a fun fact. I had pretty much perfect vision until I hit somewhere in my 40s. Now, you know, I wear glasses and they seem to be getting progressively worse. But I don't know if this has anything to do with it. But when I was a little kid, like ages like 3 to 10 or something, I thought I had a superpower because when I would look at the sun, I would then blink my eyes and I could see the sun. And I thought I was using like heat vision. Like I'd blink and like, ooh, the sun blots on your face now. So I'd look at the sun and then blink at people.
Really? That was not good for your eyeballs, dude.
I don't think so. But I had good vision up until about age 40. But yeah, I mean, I feel kind of like when Trump was told not to stare at the eclipse and he immediately did. But
yes.
I no one told me don't stare at the sun like that. But, yeah. Like when I do it, though, I have vision now. I can put the sun on someone.
That's you still do it.
No, I figured out it's probably not ideal.
Right.
I could do it. Yes.
I'll end with this one. There's so many more that I wish I could get to, but I'll end with this one. Okay. These are things that people thought was normal about their bodies until someone said, no, that's not normal. I have Cook syndrome. Only my feet are affected, and I passed it on to my daughter. Her father and I lovingly refer to her toes as skin bags. Ew. Since some don't have the medical and distal phalanges and are missing toenails.
Okay. let me make sure I understand this. So she doesn't have toenails, or she doesn't have bones and toenails? It's just little floppy things hanging off.
Little flops, dude. Little floppy skins for toes.
But how could you not realize that's not unique to you? You've never seen other people's feet, drawings, movies, cartoons?
Yeah, that's a good, I don't know. That's, yeah, maybe.
Your parents never pointed out?
Yeah, she has Cook syndrome. Only my feet are affected. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we see feet all the time. Like, you would have to know that your feet look and operate different than other people's. So
I call those foot boobies, just little flops of skin just kind of hanging out there. You know?
It's so gross, dude. I can't even think about that.
We always like to end with a good visual image like skin bags. So enjoy.
I guess that's going to do it for another fantastic episode of The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
Thanks for listening to the whole show. This is the bonus you get for getting all the way to the end.
Yeah, skin bags aside, we will have another two podcasts for you next week. Thanks for downloading the show, and see our socials.
YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Reddit, Blue Sky, etc., etc. And you can find everything at thevocalminority.net.
Check it out, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, my mini champions. It's your favorite old bag, Betty White. This has been a production of The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. New podcasts are released twice a week. Don't forget to watch The Golden Girls wherever great TV is watched.
Favorite old skin bag.
God, dude, that's so nasty.